This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Theatre, film, TV, and more. Susie Rong reviews it all on Joy Drive.
Good afternoon, Susie Rong.
Hi, Warren. I want to ask, how do you cope with having parents that are elderly and not so well?
Can I be honest with you? I'm not coping at the moment. My mum's in hospital and she's had strokes and she's got dementia. And it's interesting you ask, because I went out there on the weekend and my mum was very vibrant and energetic and switched on, and overnight she's completely changed. And I was there on the weekend, and my dad, I said, I'm going to bring Lucas out, because she knows Lucas, and she still calls him Fuzzy, my old dog, but she knows him. And I went out to the hospital, and it was sort of outside of visiting hours, and I parked in the car park, and my dad wheeled my mum out in a wheelchair, and it was really nice because she loved the dog. But it was so hard to see, because when I was driving off, I had to go, I looked in my rearview mirror, and there's my dad. I'm finding it upsetting to talk about, but my dad wheeling my mum in a wheelchair, and she's really old. She's aged so much, and it's heartbreaking, Susie. It really is.
Thanks for sharing. I have been talking to another very close friend of mine who's experienced very much the same, and it's such a difficult thing to cope with, like, all I can do is kind of lend a hearing ear, but there is no advice or anything, is there?
But the interesting thing is, you talk to people and, everyone goes through some, form of this. Parents get old and we have to look after them. And, look, I'm really struggling with it, to be honest. I'm finding it very difficult because, I'm feeling sorry for my dad too. I just seeing him, it's so sad, and he's been doing such an amazing job being a carer for my mum. He's doing a brilliant job, but just looking at him, and I can see the sadness in him, knowing that he's going to lose her soon.
It's so interesting that these things are certain to happen. It's not like they could happen. We know that they are. It will happen, but we have so little capacity to deal with it properly. My father, who's 75 now, he lives in Singapore, oceans away, and the last few years he's been having issues with his back. That it's not like a terminal disease, but it's crippling pain and it's constant. So it's really fun. It's a really weird thing, what do you do aside from, kind of saying some nice words every now and then? There's nothing that I can do, but hope for the best.
And your mum died at a young age, didn't she?
Yeah, she died at 43.
That's so young.
Yeah. So I have exceeded her by 9 years now, 8-9 years now, which is crazy to me.
I suppose, you see the difference, don't you? You're losing a parent at a young age and then losing a parent at an older age as well. And
yeah, I don't know what it's like, but I know it's certainly different. The difficulty with losing a parent at a young age is because I feel like you should have a bit more kind of mental preparation if your parents are in their, 70s, 80s, 90s. Because my mother was so young, it all happened really suddenly, and I was only 21, 22, so I guess it felt, the trauma was intense in that it came out of nowhere, and obviously at that age, I still had a lot of reliance on my parent. But now that I've been away from home for so long, and, I haven't been close to my father for a long time, there's still that weird feeling that because he's unwell, that you need to do something for him, but there's nothing you can do. Like, I've got three other siblings who live in Singapore, and it's not like they can do anything. And I'm imagining that because they're closer. I'm sorry, two are in Singapore and one is in America. That the ones who are living closer to him, as though it means something, but there's nothing that they can do either.
Yeah, well, it's interesting that you say that because, you know, I lost my brother in his 20s, and so it's only me left now, and I often think, oh, I wish he was here because we could both sort of share the grief and help, but you're right, what would we be able to do? It wouldn't make a difference because there's nothing we can really do about it. We just have to leave it to the medical professionals. But I see my dad, there's always, oh, look, you know, mum's really good today, and, you know, there's this hope, but it's like, well, no, it's not. It's getting worse, and I can see it, and, you know, on the weekend, you know, I was basically the only car in the car park and was standing next to my car because I couldn't take dog into the hospital, and my mum goes, where's your car? And, you know, I just let it wash over, and I thought, well, that's actually got a bit worse in the last week or so. So, yeah, dementia's a horrible thing. Anyone who's been touched by it.
It's a natural course of life, and what I can say is, from having lived without my mother for so many years, is it was something that that I had to deal with for a long time. I can say that the first 10 years were really hard, but it also gave me kind of a taste of like a pain, a level of pain at a very young age. And it made the subsequent years almost make it feel I think I almost feel invincible. That was at a point in time where it felt like, it's not a pain that whatever occurs to me, it's not a pain that I've never experienced before. So I think that's what I learned from losing my mother at a young age. So I kind of look at it as, you know, as a natural course, like this is what happens. You know, most people lose their parents before they die themselves, and then you kind of cultivate some learning from it. Well, the whole point of us talking about this difficult subject.
I've got one more question for you, Susie, and that is, when you go back to Singapore, because you do go back every year, is it sometimes twice a year, do you notice big changes? Because it's such a long time between visits and when you see your father. Do you notice changes?
I feel like there was a big change, maybe in the late 60s, it became, because he's always been a really athletic, strong, very, very proud, some say narcissistic person. So there came a time in his late 60s that he had to cave into that feebleness that comes with that age, and the face, the body, everything just changed. It was sudden. There was one visit that looked like there was a sudden change, and then I just kind of had this realization that, oh, he is going to become feeble. I had told myself that, you know, you got to prepare for your parent growing old and eventually going, but because of his personality, I never imagined him being kind of frail and feeble, but that's what happened at one stage, and I wouldn't say that it was a decline since then. It just has pretty much been pretty stable, except for his ailments the last couple of years, I guess.
It's amazing how it happened so quickly. I mean, my mum was cooking Christmas dinner, not last Christmas, the one before, and by the afternoon, she was a completely different person. It was something. I've never seen something so happen so quickly and unexpectedly. It was, and I suppose it does happen to all of us, doesn't it? And we are talking, Susie, about clean slate.
Trying to avoid talking about clean slate.
We're trying to avoid talking about it. It is on Amazon Prime. I wonder if anyone saw it. If you did, text in 0427-569-949. Susie, do you want to give you a review?
Desiree returns home to small town Alabama after spending 17 years in New York City. No one knows that she now lives as a woman. Even her father, Harry, is not given a heads up. So when he opens the door expecting to reunite with his son, it is the biggest surprise that greets him. The new sitcom Clean Slate, now streaming on Amazon Prime Video, could not arrive at a better time as trans people face some of the worst attacks in America right now, having very recently elected a fascist government into office. Clean Slate fates did not predict any of this, however, with 8 episodes of wholesome, optimistic family fun demonstrating love and acceptance for trans and gay characters in the Deep South. It all seems incredibly fantastical and unrealistic now, in contrast with what is actually happening in real life. But as a viewer, I'm certainly grateful for the sweet and light entertainment it wishes to provide, instead of all the doom and gloom that's always surrounding trans people on screen. The story is enjoyable, but the dialogue isn't always well written in Clean Slate. A lot of the direction and the acting is all a little bit average. The comedy is often very forced, and none of it was really funny to me, I'm sad to say. Nonetheless, it is wonderful to see trans icon Laverne Cox emerge as a leading lady after 2 decades in show business. She works hard for her role of Desiree, but we never really believe that she grew up washing cars in the family business, and her chemistry with George Wallace, who plays her father, is painful. Lacking. Clean Slate is beautifully shot, though, with excellent work in photography and with all its visual design elements. Warren, did you have a better time with it than I did?
No. I didn't, but I got a couple of questions that I wanted to ask you, Susie, out of it, and that is Clean Slate, it's about a woman coming home after, what was it, 23 years and facing a father. And I thought, you built your life here, coming from Singapore. Do you ever feel like you've had your own clean slate moment, returning to where you came from and wondering if it still feels like home?
I went back. There was a time that, because I go back every year, so it was quite a gradual transformation. Like, my transition was pretty gradual. For many years, I looked very androgynous. I looked like I was gender fluid. I never used that term at the time. I didn't really think about those words very much. And also, for many years when I was living androgynously, I never thought about transitioning. So it was a funny thing that other people saw it before I did. Presenting many years as androgynous, 1 year I went back having transitioned. So there was 1 year I returned and my stepmother said, "Oh, so you've decided." Those were her words, that there was nothing more explicit than that. And then I said, yeah, I think so. Yeah, that's my experience of what it was, and it took a few more years before my father was able to, in a text to me, ask, "Does that mean I have to call you by your new name now?" I said, "Yes, that would be preferred. Thank you very much." And he's been good with that. The pronouns are tricky, but because he likes speaking a Chinese language and the pronoun is interchangeable, it's the same pronoun, so it's not so hard that way. So with my transition, my father hasn't been too hard. It was harder when in Singapore I lived as a gay man. I think for him it was challenging because he was younger, and also because I think I don't know if it's a generational thing or a cultural thing, where just for straight men of that generation, the idea of gayness is very, very difficult for them. Mm-hmm. The idea that two men could sleep together is very hard for them. I sometimes feel like, because I'm presenting completely different now, I wonder if it makes it easier for him. Just the idea that I'm not, a man sleeping with a man. that makes it a little bit psychologically easier for him.
Maybe, but see, right now we're seeing an intense wave of anti-trans rhetoric and laws in the US. And when I watched Clean Slate, I thought, it was an opportunity, really, I suppose, to tell trans stories. And even though we probably didn't think it was told that well, isn't it good that trans stories are still being told?
It's really important. It's really important to... Oh, obviously, this has been on my mind a lot lately.
We haven't spoken about it.
Yeah. We need to keep up with the defiance, because there really is nothing they can do to wipe us out. Like, we have always existed. We may have hidden more in the past, but we have always existed, and we cannot forget that. And I think one more thing that we can do that's within our power is to exhibit a lot of joy and to find as much joy as we can and not let whatever rhetoric that's out there dampen our joy. That's very unhealthy for us psychologically. And also, I think it is one of the ways we can weaponize, you know, our identities is to show ourselves as unapologetic and joyful. Obviously, there are situations where it is unsafe to do so, but I do think that the world has changed enough, you know, that for most of us, we can be who we are, you know, and there is talk. Laverne Cox is the star of Clean Slate. She did say that she thinks that maybe for children who are trans in America, maybe it would be safer for them to live in secret. Stealth is the word that we like to use. And I understand where she's coming from because she's thinking about the safety of all of that. But I do remember coming out at a time where it was completely unsafe in Singapore. And I didn't have a lot of safety around me, but what I had was pride and confidence and an assuredness about who I am, and I think that was worth a lot. You know, I have seen people who weren't able to come out, and I don't begrudge them for that at all. And I look at it and I think that that's a really sad life. You know, they have the safety and all that. They have the, you know, the I guess sort of like a fake heteronormativity that they live. They have the security of all of that. But I don't see any happiness. So part of me wants to say that, you know, you can hide, but you're not going to be happy. So I don't know why. I don't think it's worth it.
I suppose, what scares you the most about the current climate?
Well, what's scary is, you know, the last 10 years we have developed a lot of language about trans identities. Like, for the last 10 years, we have done this thing where we kind of teach everyone how to understand us, how to talk about us, how to talk with us. So there's this new language, you know, this way of communication that we are no longer this, like, invisible thing, or no longer this weird taboo that people kind of don't talk about. Now, we have been able to carve out an existence in the mainstream for many parts of the world. And the problem now is if people are going to have bringing things back, you know, turning time backwards, I worry that this ability to communicate with us, like, I think they can use this language to turn things against us, that we are easier to identify and therefore easier to attack. I think that's what's happening now, because, like, we have become we have found a way to be more prominent in how we talk about, you know, life in general, and we've made ourselves a prominent target now, and I think that's what's happening. So we are being used as targets for people to fight for power, where in fact trans lives affect virtually nobody else. Yeah,
you know what gets me is I'm hearing it everywhere. I flicked on a radio station the other day, it was one of these conservative news platforms, and they were talking about the trans, the puberty blocker changes in Queensland, and, you know, they were saying it's fantastic that the Queensland government's on the right thing, you know, it's terrible, and all of this sort of thing. The language, I won't repeat it, was just absolutely terrible. You see what Donald Trump's doing. There's a lot of stuff going on at the moment. What gets me is it's like everyone's focusing on trans people, but let's be honest, the world's dying. We've got climate change. Why aren't they focusing on the big things? Like, they're really picking on small vulnerable people, and I find that,
well, those big things, these big things take a lot of sacrifice to fix, you know.
They don't fix it, there'll be no one, they won't be able to pick on anyone.
But because our politics involves, you know, 3 years, 4 years, so they're just finding little battles that they can win, little ways to put a wedge between people. And trans people, just as gay people have been for many years, are the easy scapegoat. Like, they don't feel like there's any sacrifice that they have to make when they're arguing about our lives. Like, it's the 0.1% of us who are trans who have to bear the burden. Like, they have no skin in the game, but they can talk about us all day long.
I feel like, yeah, I just feel like it's a deflection in, you know, on something that they see as an easy target, and there's bigger things that they should be focusing on and putting their energy into. And that's what I find really frustrating too. Not apart from all the hurt that's going on at the moment. Susie, I want to end this conversation not only asking you what's coming up next week we need to watch, but if someone out is listening, perhaps a young trans person feeling like the world is against them, what would you want them to hear from you? Because you're a leader.
Look, I think one huge difference that the young generations have now that we didn't have is the internet. And there is so much that you can, so much information that you can find that props yourself up, you know, gives you a sense of your selfhood and gives you a sense of who you are. Because back in the day, all the information that we could get was like, you are wrong, you're an abomination, and you need to change yourself. So they've got that as an advantage, as well as being able to connect with lots of people, you know. And the thing with politics now is, I think a lot of the danger is how we are isolating from one another. And I think if we can find ways to build community and to connect with people and not be pulled apart so that we are easy to attack and easy to break as individuals, as small, you know, small citizens of this country. But if we are able to come together as groups, we are much more formidable. And then in that way, they will think twice in bullying us, I guess. So I think I am optimistic that our young trans people, young queer people have so much more knowledge and so much more kind of confidence in who they are that we didn't have. And, you know, we didn't have this and we came so far. So I feel that there is a lot of optimism to be found there.
Susie Rong, what are we watching next week?
Invisible Boys on Stan follows a group of gay teens in the remote Western Australian town of Geraldton. The series explores the challenges they face in finding friendship and understanding after the 2017 same-sex marriage plebiscite. We'll see if it's any good when I see you next Tuesday.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.